Nachos Amigos, and welcome to Record Breakers, a music podcast where a group of friends gather together to share music with each other, an album at a time. It's like a little book club for music. Fun time had by all. I'm PD Rave, and gravity definitely meant a lot to me a couple weeks ago. That's why I had to take an x-ray for my shoulder. Here with me is my team, my squad, my crew, my party. We've got David.
While others flee, you still advance. Thrust forth like an ancient lance, fighting like a modern dance. Omega.
Thrusting forth as well, Drew.
I cannot be held responsible for any comments that are screamed from behind me, so I apologize for that.
Exactly. And of course, we've got Brett.
Believe it or not, PD's shoulder is sore.
Yeah.
I don't know any more lyrics to.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, he's on drugs.
Believe it or not, it's not good.
But I'm not. Luckily, the drugs are not painkillers or anything like that.
Unfortunately.
But because it's not that bad, luckily.
Don't know anybody in the Florida area. Can't help you. Sorry.
No, it's not, I'm certain I can't make a phone call.
Flaxseed oil, maybe some tiger balm.
I'm certain I can't just call
that ointment
and ask for the Jeff Hardy special.
A little PRP injection.
We're here to talk about music, not make jokes at wrestlers' expense that don't deserve it because they've turned their life around and are doing much better now.
Look, they did an angle on it, so
yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, you guys in your wrestling talk, jeez.
Yeah,
engaging with hashtag. That
it's almost like two of you had a podcast all about this at one point. But
yeah,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
This is news to me.
Roman freestyle. You know,
kind of, yeah. It was the fighting game podcast that we had. Yeah, that was different.
All about Tekken.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes, Tekken.
Blaze Blue.
I like Tekken.
We're always down for some good ass Tekken around here. But we're mainly talking about
plus
music.
Blasting this album right out the script.
We're talking about an album. We're talking about music. The provider of the album this week is Drew. Drew, what have you brought for us this week?
Well, like I said last week, it's something that band I didn't really give a chance when I was younger. Just because they were the eyeliner fucks ruining what I liked about emo. But band from New Jersey by the name of My Chemical Romance, with the last album before they went on quite a long hiatus, Danger Days, The True Lies of the Fabulous Killjoys.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about expectations. What do I start with? Brett, what were your expectations coming into this album?
My expectations were few, because this isn't a genre that, like, I was already sick of the genre that the genre that was ruined for Drew was not even, like, on my, I was an adult by the time this band was popular, so there's a little bit of age difference. But no, I can't say that I've ever sat down and tried to listen to anything, so I had no idea what my opinion on this was going to be. Or even like what I was going to get. And trust me, I would have been wrong. I would have been very wrong if I were to like guess what I was going to be listening to. So,
David, what were your expectations coming into this album?
Zero. Like Brett, I was not privy to this band at all. And this is just a style and genre of music and presentation that I really just was in no way familiar with. Just it was in a completely different purview that I ever even came close to. Like, I just have no frame of reference for these guys or this album at all. But I like that when I can go into something completely sight unseen, unknown. I really only know the band's name, and that's literally it. And I enjoy moments like that.
Mm-hmm. I was not sure what we were gonna get into with this album, because I'm familiar with My Chemical Romance, the name, the band, the style,
the fan base.
Yeah, the fan base. And it was the late stage emo sound.
Tell me about the fan base. Tell me about them.
They are young.
My whole opinion on emo fans is that's Drew. They are. Drew. Because that's where the cute girls were.
Drew, yeah. Please. Tell me, for everyone to hear, tell me about the My Chemical Romance fan base. So, elucidate.
So the reason
in great detail.
That I was always...
Quickly now.
Is
no
that
stammering.
I'm not stammering. My era of emo was the Saves the Day, Get Up Kids, the Jade Trees, the Vagrant Records, like the stuff that came out of like the Weezer prototype and like made a little more power pop, a little more punk, stuff like that. My Chemical Romance was that like late stage emo when it sort of became popular. It was a lot of makeup wearing kids, like almost, I don't want to say this, when you stereotype the scene kids from that era, the Rars, the hair and whatnot,
the every YTMND joke mold
and grew. Now, My Chemical Romance, whether it's fair to keep them in that mold is something for Block B. But that's sort of where that look like started, specifically with their lead singer, Gerard Way.
I'm very, very good.
That, the eyeliner, the makeup, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Start his look.
And I was a fan of like various emo bands. I think if my collection of emo bands or post-hardcore bands would be like the Taking Back Sundays, the Thursdays.
Right in the middle of where I was and where this
another band whose lead singer turned out to be a creep recently, so I won't name them, but that band as well, even though I liked the music back then, but I'm not gonna name them. Which is
Brett, to answer your question,
corporate old, is that it?
Was
that
something like that?
To answer Brett's question, does Sloan count?
I don't know. The Smiths would probably be my era.
The Cure? No.
Yeah, with New Romantic plus a jangle guitar. And in 2010, mind you.
Yes, 2010. By the way, that band I'm not naming, I found out about that issue, that scandal recently. And the funny thing is that I knew people around the mid-2000s, I knew at least a couple of girls, one specific girl that was hanging around in this like the local music scene, that was close personal friends with the lead singer of that band, that guy. And he even had called him, and he had picked up a phone call from her in the middle of a show and like held this phone out to the audience, which is like, in retrospect, whoa.
Weird.
See, the internet is telling me that Canadian rock band Sloan is not in fact emo, but they're just indie.
They're just emotional.
Carry on.
But that frame of reference, that was where I was coming from. My Chemical Romance were like the ones that were like that next step up in mainstream appeal and mainstream status. And I didn't hate them. I didn't dislike them. I liked a couple of their songs that were there, but they were just, you know, they were popular, and I didn't connect with them because they were just, it just, they were there and they were a band and they had songs and stuff like that. So it wasn't, I would say I didn't have a strong dislike, or it just wasn't like, or like any kind of hatred. They were just, you know, a band that was popular and that had, you know, good songs. So I was in. I was interested to sit down and listen to something like this that was a little bit more ambitious. That from what I remember. But yeah, let's talk about this album musically. Drew, how would you describe this album musically?
Well, especially with this podcast and stuff like this, I've been really trying to, and I've done this a few times, go back to music I didn't really give a chance to, and come at it with a new set of eyes. And then I didn't do that with these guys until all of a sudden I'm in a car with her and she's controlling the radio. But having done that, the songs off of this album that always came up always stuck out to me a lot from the other stuff that I had heard. It's a concept album, from start to finish, and there's a 6-volume comic book, I believe, that goes along with it.
And I will say, Drew,
that
when you mentioned a band with a concept album and a comic book, this was not the band I expected.
No.
It was another band that I actually really, really like a lot, but hey, I'm good with a plot twist.
The other choice was Panic at the Disco. I forget
that. Right.
But
I was thinking Coheed and Cambria.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. So it was either
time.
The Theater Kids or the like makeup emos. So, the thing about that is that looking at it and learning more, Gerard Way always had a want to write these sorts of stories, the comic stories, the sci-fi and stuff like that. He always had an interest in that. So having this be like sort of his first foot in the door, and then parlaying that into as the band sort of took their hiatus going into comic books, I think makes a lot of sense. And if they have gotten back together, COVID sort of put a little bit of a hamper on that, because they were doing tour dates and stuff like that, and the thought was they were going to start making new music. And if they do, I hope they stay in this milieu, because I've said this before and I'll say it again. To me, there's a definite difference in music when you can tell the band is having fun first and not trying to like just purely achieve like X goal, right? Like this album is going to be about this because it has to be about this, and this is what it has to be. There's more fun in this record than I think a lot of their other records. For me, also, it is something that is very different, especially from their first 2 albums. There's big swells, there's strong vocals. It almost has like a boisterous, like arena rock feel almost in that way at times. A lot of crash cymbal, driving guitar, but other times it tends to be more subdued. It tends to be quiet, tends to bring you in. The storyline of it, these killjoys that are going across this wasteland, I think is really fun realized, especially in some of the tracks, which we'll get into in the accompanying videos. And there's a certain like style and swagger to the album that I think that they sort of, not that swagger, different.
Let me hide my face with my microphone for a little while. Hey guys.
We're all going to do the swagger real quick.
There's got to be a basketball hoop behind me too.
But you guys weren't a video podcast at that point.
Yeah.
We were for a minute, but
peek behind the curtain.
But they'd been selling out arenas at this point. They deserved a little bit of leeway on that. I think there's also a tightness in this record that I think is really, really cool. Like I said, they were having fun. You can tell they were having fun, but there's a vision and an execution here. Lead singer Gerard Way, his brother is on bass, Mikey, and Mikey and Toro, the guitar player, I think without them, you don't have the same band. There's the lyric and the concept and the ideas, but those two, I think, bring a tightness to the musical aspect of it, that really shouldn't go without noting. it's not a Paramore situation where you could take Hayley Williams and just put her with other people and it would be essentially pretty equal. This is something where I don't think if you have specifically those three, it doesn't work the same. Because of the tightness between Mikey and Toro and how they play off each other, I think it's really cool.
Listen to any of their bands that they've made, like outside of the Michael Gorman scope.
Yeah.
Eero's band fucking sucks. Fucking vocals.
if you cannot hear her, the drummer created another band, and she's not a fan, we'll say, to keep it nice there. But
so you take Paramore and you put Chris Cornell in.
Frank Iero.
Or oppositely, yes. You take Hayley and put her in Rage Against the Machine.
Guitar. Oh, okay.
Rhythm guitar and
that would be fun. I think Tom would enjoy songwriting with that sound of voice. That would be fun.
Hootie and the Blowfish, but Huey Lewis
instead of Hootie.
But country. Hootie yes. And the Blowfish, but country. Wait.
He's amazing.
Fuck.
I mean, Darius Rucker is going to show up one of these
Bootsy
days.
Bootsy and the Blowfish. There you go.
Yes, Bootsy and the Blowfish.
Yeah.
I only want to.
And we have a show title.
Yes.
Show title, Bootsy and the Blowfish would happen. Like, God damn it.
Yes, yes. Brett, how would you describe this album musically?
God, I just, like, if I could paint a picture with quality of what's in my brain, like, Bootsy and the, yeah. The different kind of blow, and a different kind of, yeah. So, I am not who you come to for cutting edge, like, critiques, hot takes about a genre that I wasn't around for. I literally was, like, I missed this. It was not part of my, like, I didn't even walk into this music until long after it was over, because I was hanging out with, you know, grungy punk rock guys, and, like, you know. I was already out and about living on my own before, like, I think a lot of this really took off to the, like, at least where I am. Like, if I was coming into, like, thinking of what I was assuming from, you know, when I think of eyeliner and neckties and generally, you know, and then I think and I look and I see the members of this band are older than all of us. So there's sort of that. I'm trying to do the mental math of, okay, so they're a little bit older, so they're pulling from different things than I am. But I did not expect this to be as produced as like a GD Muse album. Like, I did not expect to have so many like swooshes and orchestral strings. Yeah. It's like, wow. It's that sound. I don't have any problems with it, but it's like
Muse is proggy as fuck. So of course I like them.
I'm not a huge fan of Muse, but I get where you're coming from.
Sound like the digital effects that are done underneath to be sort of like how there's like the drums are kind of weird because like there are pulls from a lot of things. There's even a pull that sounds like it's straight up Eric Clapton playing Layla, as I described it before, like a Fender Champ turned all the way. And I'll get into that when we get into the songs, but there's some weird stuff. Also got to be said, vocals, they sit higher than normal conversation speaking, but it's not exactly singing. It's sort of that talk singing sometimes, you know what I'm talking about? It's like, it's not straight up like doing poetry, but it's not quite One Night in Bangkok, but it's that sort of in between. The vocals, the melody sits here, which is higher than I could ever sing in my life. And then the harmonies are above that. So it's one of those bands where it's sonically the vocals raise up a little higher. But they make up in the low end and the mid range by having a lot of like weird noises and ooh woos and like a cello.
There's some laser synth in this.
There's a straight up Jimi Hendrix octavo. There's weird noises that I did not expect in here. And like it was kind of thrown together like it was somebody threw a bunch of parts into a salad shooter, but like had the production quality of the like of 2010. So like it was clean room clean, and every little like even in the like super overdriven like guitar parts, like there's dirt and then there's like you know, what sounds like, oh, it's a sour night. But no, that's actually an exactly planned out note. So everything sort of is extremely the way they want it to be. And I was not expecting it to be so put together as it goes. Also, yeah, I was not expecting that. I was expecting more tight pants and like
something messier.
Crotches that are dropped and, you know, people being upset about love that is not returned.
Yeah. David, how would you describe this album musically?
I would describe this album musically as a concept album that only keeps to its concept very loosely. Normally, when I have an idea of a concept album, the theme is very, very pronounced. And the theme on this album was not as pronounced as you usually expect. It's there, but it's also more metaphorical. This album has sort of a thematic, romantic, artsy kind of feel without leaning all the way into its message. It's kind of telling you that there is a story, but the story doesn't really matter. It's about the vibe and about the overarching way the music makes you feel, which is all right. It's a rock album. It's probably not the kind of rock album you expect, or I would have expected, from this band who I only know by name. And it was well produced. It's not super complex or technical, but it doesn't have to be, and that's fine. And I think that if you were of the right time frame, if this hit you in the right place at the right time, this is going to be very transformative for you, because concept albums have a way of doing that for people over the years.
Tony, can you hear me?
More people than this one.
Yeah. This album has a fun energy to it and a fun vibe to it. It does only loosely serve, like David said, only loosely serves the concept, but it serves the setting more than it serves a specific linear story. It serves a vibe and a setting and a kind of world building concept more than it tells a specific story stringently. But I think it's fine. It does that. It has the fun, like, borrows from Queens of the Stone Age of having the fake radio stuff, which is borrowed from other places too. But it's the thing.
Yes, things you come up with.
This is the most immediate frame of reference I could come up
with. It's a few years after Jet Set Radio.
You got to have the fake radio. The fake radio interview.
A lot of post-apocalyptic nerd media in the 2010s. Yeah. That they're
or skit at the deli.
Let's be fair.
Yeah. I do like, when we get into the songs, I do want to give a shout out to a member of one of my problematic phase in music. Which is a member of Mindless Self Indulgence, Steve Ray. Steve Montana.
You mentioned one of my problematic faves earlier.
But one of my problematic faves, Mindless Self Indulgence, I'm seeing Steve Ray being a part of this album was kind of odd, but it makes sense. Gerard Way being married to a member of Mindless Self Indulgence kind of
Jimmy Urine, Steve Jimmy Rye, Urine. Kitty and Lindsay.
Exactly. I think Gerard is married to Lindsay. No, to
take your word for it, brother.
Let me see.
Moving on.
Yes.
I like that time when Lindsay pulled out his silver sword and then he attacked the monster. Wait, that's Geralt.
Yeah, that's Geralt. But yeah, seeing his appearance, but this album has a nice bombasticness. It has a nice high energy feel to it. But let's talk about the key tracks. Drew, what would be some of the key tracks that you would zero in on?
Well, for me, starting out after the radio intro, the na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. This coupled with the video, I think, does exactly what PD says it does and what this should do, which is set a tone for, sort of the idea of the album. The Killjoys being this, roving band through the wastelands of California, right, is sort of what it is. And their stories within, and sort of setting up that tone to it. And I think PD's fair there. This sets up more tone than it does direct bullet points. A lot of the visuals and the videos help, but that's sort of where this goes, right? It's that roving band. And I feel like post-apocalyptic stories, you either start with the cars full of people, running
Rico
down.
Rico Kasich.
I was going to reference the beginning of the first Borderlands or Mad Max, where it's just driving and things popping off and fire and
all the California Love video.
Yeah. The California Love video, which they filmed in Australia, weirdly enough.
Guzzling interceptors, they got it all there.
Yes.
Sing, when I said there was some crazy laser synths, and using those synths to sort of build in that first chorus, I think worked really well. There's a definite sci-fi feel to the song, which I think is really cool. Kids from Yesterday, the tone on the guitars in this one felt way different than a lot of the other tracks. It's also kind of a sing-along-y song, which, again, they're playing big shows, they're playing big arenas and stuff like this at that time, because Black Parade was fucking everywhere. So it makes sense. Also, the synths feel a lot like a Reggie and the Full Effect song to me for some reason, and I'm always okay with that, because I love Reggie and the Full Effect. And Vampire Money, making a song that's deliberately saying you offered us money to do Twilight music and we don't want to because we want to keep our integrity and we don't like Twilight is kind of funny to me. Just one of those we're not gonna and we don't want to and here's why. Yeah. I think was kind of a cool way to end the album, because that's a thing that actually happened. They were optioned for that movie and they were nah.
Instead, I'm pretty sure they got a Death Cab song. So,
could have hung out with Shark Boy himself.
Yeah, no, not the right Shark Boy. He's the correct Shark Boy sued that movie and won. it's kind of like another two instances.
Let's get into it.
The two amazing instances.
You guys can.
We're gonna get into Twilight beef. This is not where I expected this.
No. We're talking about the fact that wrestlers.
I have taken my melatonin. You guys go right ahead.
Two wrestlers who properly trademarked their name and had to
L.A. Park.
Yes. Didn't have to. So Sting was a more amicable arrangement. Of course, Steve Borden has the trademark to Sting, and Sting the singer pays a nominal, fee. Gordy. And then Shark Boy, that's the fishing line.
Robert Rodriguez's own.
Yes, Shark Boy, the wrestler, TNA great.
Is there a lava girl in wrestling?
No,
probably in Mexico.
Probably,
I would hope so.
But yeah, he had to sue the movie. He's like, hey, That's my trademark. Pay me. And that all worked out. But that being said, Brett.
We're educational, if not entertaining.
Brett, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
So, it was at the after the intro that I was like, oh wow, I like took a look at the year that this album came out because I was expecting, I did not know that this album came out so recently, but the chorus that is added, it kind of had a children's choir feel. And the guitar solo is almost like the organ solo from Highway Star by Deep Purple. Yeah. That just straight up. So like there was that. Sing. The orchestral strings, reverb drums, and some like 90s pop radio lyrics. I was also not expecting that. From this album, I was like, hey, where's those tight pants? Where's the being sad? Where's the guy liner? Planetary, go. The chorus, I swear to God, every time I heard it, I was like, this is almost Dragula. And I couldn't not hear Dragula. In the chorus, and
second episode in a row where we've had something that was almost White Zombie or Rob Zombie. Yes.
I mean, we're just gonna have to do it like one of these days. Ends.
I am the Astro Man.
We'll just do the soundtrack to Way of the Warrior, which was mostly White Zombie.
House of America, House of a Thousand Corpses was terrible and not in a funny way.
Naughty Dog's worst video game had White Zombie in it, which makes it its best game. So, ends. So it's blues licks with like the tone of a tiny cranked amp. Almost like I'm pretty sure that this is what happened with the song Layla was a Fender Champ, which is an amplifier that's like, you know, little tiny little thing. And it was turned all the way up.
Right?
Yeah, and you just turn it all the way up. It had like an 8-inch speaker in it, but like put a microphone in front of it and it sounds great. But it has that really saturated like sound to it where the overdrive is doing all kinds of funky things, which was also not something that I was expecting here. Like every now and then there was just like, okay, like tell me more about who inspired you in your songwriting, because there's certainly some of that going on. I assume. I don't know who the hell these guys are. I know they're from Jersey.
So while researching the album and looking stuff up, when questioned about, he was not a very masculine person on stage. We'll leave it at that. He cites some of the people in rock and roll that he looked up to, as Freddie Mercury, David Bowie, Iggy and T-Rex, along with like early glam. So,
I did not see any of that in this, really. I mean, if it inspired, great. That's fantastic.
It was probably the earlier albums. Get it. The earlier albums, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm just. Yeah, there's so much I don't know for me to have like a strong opinion, but I have questions. But those are I may have to. I don't know if I want to, probably but I may need to do more questions. Research.
I'm good.
They've got lyrics tattooed on them, so I'm pretty sure. But
yes. God. Yes. Pop up like that. David, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Planetary, go! In the words of Daria Morgendorfer, it has a beat and you can dance to it if you have no shame.
Yes.
Party Poison is a solid, fun, loud rock song. I respect it. Scarecrow kind of gave me that movie vibe where it was kind of like the climactic moment of a indie romantic comedy, very Garden State third act, if you will. Also, Summertime, I'm going to say, If you're gonna do a new wave song, just do a new wave song. This felt like it wanted to be a new wave song, but it didn't go all the way. I didn't dislike it, but if you're gonna do a new wave song, just do one.
I've brought Dream Car on here before, right? Like that's the thing I've
done. I think we've talked about it. All kinds of waves have been represented on this podcast.
Devo, third wave.
Devo came on.
Synthwave, vaporwave.
I had some synthwave. I've done the vaporwave.
Can we do the wave? Like we're at a football game?
Guys, what are
your conclusive thoughts on this album?
Wait. Let's talk about some of the tracks. I will say... you give a shout out to parentheses. It sets a nice pace following your first experience with Steve Rye as Dr. Death Defying. And it sets a nice pace and follows through to the next track, Bulletproof Heart. Just has a nice, like, it's a nice, like, 1-2 punch, those two. It's energetic, it's fun. Planetary Go. I would say the one thing that kept coming up on this song, not exactly musically, but it, like, in rhythm and kind of like tone, I think even like the melody. I kept thinking of Power Man 5000, specifically when worlds collide. Yeah,
it's like
ah, you ready to go? Do you wanna do baby? Like that like cadence.
That is just, common. Yeah, I get
that. It just kind of kept popping up.
That's not the reference I would have thought of, but you're not wrong. God damn it!
It just was the thing that, but overall, it was a really cool, like, incorporating like the electronic sounds and like had a nice like switch up, which was really cool. And yeah, Vampire Money is a really nice way to close the after, you know, as like a rejoinder, even though you got your goodbyes from Steve Rye, and then after the playing of the national anthem, in Good Night, Dr. Death, which is kind of nice. Like, just when it started playing, I was like, are they just gonna play the national anthem? It's like, yeah,
that'd be the United States national anthem, Italian one.
Or yeah, you know, the Korean one. Like it's the United States national anthem. It's just like they played it with like maybe a twist at the very end, but that was fun. But then, yeah, transitions to Vampire Money, which is just a nice, like, you know, energetic punk-esque rejoinder where they expound their own integrity as musicians. But it's still a fun track. Let's bring it back around the horn and talk about some conclusive thoughts. Brett, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
I kind of was left with more questions than I started with, because I like it. This isn't something that I listened to and was like, yeah, give me some more. It was more like, what did I miss out on, and how do I put myself in the brain of somebody who came of age when this was the thing that defined them as a person?
Because context, they're the people. Context.
Because like, but
context see, on this when, one is weird.
Well, I mean, but like when I came of age and like I had, you know, Punk and Drublick from NoFX and like Bad Religion, like I knew that Bad Religion was actual quality and NoFX was garbage. But I liked them both and defended them, even though I knew I was wrong. So I got to put myself in the shoes of somebody else who is completely wrong, because I don't know that like I would be tattooing lyrics of this band's on my lower back or something, or across my rib cage. Yeah. I just don't think it's gonna ever hit me in that way. Nor do I think it was ever designed to. I didn't really get into the, like, I'm not a lyrics guy, so like it didn't speak to me with that sweet poetry, but like musically, it was sort of scattershot and like a bunch of different things. It didn't really follow a theme as much as I would expect a normal band's album, which is not a bad thing. It's just like, it was a lot. It was a lot to take in, like, and to digest on, and to like, and honestly, to remember every little, like, because they filled every spare little breath of time with a boodle-deedle-doo or a weird noise. And like, it's a lot. And it's, you know, it's part of how they make music in 2010. But just, I don't know. I can see why I was not attracted at the time. And I struggle to find the things that make this something that you define yourself with. But more power to you, because let me tell you, I'm drinking rich energy drinks and like have not video games to make Deej happy. Like, yeah. You know, I'm not a man of taste. I'm a man of a taste. So don't go for what I have to say, but
yes. Mortal Kombat 3 is objectively good.
Yes.
Fight me on it.
I mean, I will. I'll be
in Mortal Kombat 3. I mean,
it's no Dong Dong Never Die. Let's be fair.
Yes. we need to have the science happen again.
I mean, all kinds of rib cages are going to come out of my mouth because I just ate you whole.
I miss the science. David.
Drop a arcade machine on you.
Yes. Damn, David, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
Get real big and then step on you.
Yes.
I will take off my mask and show off that I have a Medusa head then.
And I will do that.
I would say...
Still David. Fuck.
So, this, from the album that I brought recently, In Absentia by Porcupine Tree, there is a particular track on that album called The Sound of Muzak, and it has a lyric line that I would probably tattoo on my body that says, "Music of rebellion makes you want to rage, but it's made by millionaires who are nearly twice your age." That's the feeling that I got from this. However, I put my prog rock snobs self aside, and I appreciated that this album is very romantic. There is a romantic, damn the torpedoes, we're going to die anyway, so let's just have fun vibe to that. And I respect that. It is almost whimsical. They took what started as a sci-fi apocalyptic plot and turned it into a John Hughes movie where the nuclear apocalypse is really the friends you made along the way. And I respect that.
Didn't Weird Things do that for a little while?
Kind of. Yes.
I can respect that. I think that it's a bit minimalistic as a rock album, generally, but I understand that's kind of the point. And for everyone that found this album to be transformative and found this band to be significant for them, more power to them. I did not dislike my time with this. I thought it was fine.
Mm-hmm. This is a fun time. Like, I think, I don't know if this is like it sunk into me or, you know, like permeated my soul or anything, but it was a fun time and it was a fun album. It had a good energy to it. It had good vibes, as it were. And it was pretty hype. I think it's well made, it's well produced, it's tight. And I appreciate that Gerard lets me have at least one portion of mindless self-indulgence, even though I refuse to bring them onto the show just because that's a whole weird pack of weirdness. I don't know if we're ready for.
I've listened to three mindless self-indulgent songs. I've never heard an entire album front to back, so that would be interesting.
I regularly listen to Bill Cosby's version of Sgt. Pepper. Yes. So, like, problematic music.
We could bring on the Joker's card.
But I do it on YouTube so that he doesn't get any royalties. So. Yes,
exactly. Yes. But yeah, this album is well made and well done. And but I don't know if I will go back to it often. But I appreciate it for what it is. Drew, if you're with us, Drew. Whoa.
Sorry. Talking about laundry across the...
No. I was hoping that you were just fighting about this band.
Yes. Drew, what would be your conclusion on this album?
Well, like I said at the start, it was a band that I willfully went against at the time. Now, going back and hearing it with fresh ears, it is something where I've enjoyed what I found. It's not my favorite band of the time, nor is it my favorite band of the current. But I can respect what was going on. Especially this album, there's a certain fun that they were having. Like David said, there's a certain whimsy to this album, and I think that's why, if I'm going to gravitate towards any, it's going to be this one. Because there's the sci-fi element, there's the weird element, there's the very comic book element. I mean, guys helped write for Spider-Man and written multiple comics for Dark Horse now, like, it makes sense. That said, it's something where I definitely can get the weirdness. What I want to highlight is there's two very different things going on. If I can point, there we go. I got it. I got there. Brett notes this album that there's a lot of polish to it and a lot of production to it. I am more in that camp than David's camp. Just because I'm also coming from my era of that was like I said, the Get Up Kids or like Saves the Day, right? In this era of music, or going even back, like more into like the punk rock stuff, the Bad Religions of the world, which is what I think of as stripped down and simple. This feels like
there's four part harmonies. Don't tell me that thing's stripped down.
Let's be fair.
More rock bands should do four part harmonies. More of them.
God damn it. But right, there's a definite point to be made.
Right?
But there is a different sound to it. There's a different idea to it, right? There is a different build to this album than their first two. And one of the ones that they're very known for. And I think there's something to that. And I think there's something fun to that. They stopped what they were doing and started mixing more into it, which I think is fun. I'm usually more of a fan of I want it raw. I want just
I want
four guys
raw.
In a booth.
Like raw.
But
yeah, baby, I like it raw.
And I liked what it was going for, and I dig the sound, and it makes me actually want to read the comic books. So it is what it is.
Yes.
I mean, I did not read the associated extra credit. This is like when we had Curly on, and I did not read the screenplay that I did not know was a part of it.
Also, the dog that she was yelling about was literally under my feet, and I didn't notice because I see
it. That's, hey, you know, sometimes it is that way.
Yeah, it'll be like that sometimes. Yeah.
I also sleep on my stomach.
I will say that I enjoyed Coheed and Cambria in album and comic book form a lot.
If I'm going with a concept album, I'm going with Coheed first, to be fair.
Yes. let's get down to the main event of the evening, the moment we've all been waiting for.
Can I get some broom dancers? Yeah. I want some broom dancers.
If you can pull them out, the broom dancers. Let's get down to the our haiku reviews. Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
Let's get down to business.
Haiku numero, numero uno.
Girlfriend stole my joke.
Brett, what is your haiku?
My haiku escaped from me there for a second. Now I really know. one piece of their catalog. Not really my thing.
David, what is your haiku?
It's rock for the teens. This is not my brand of cheese. I'm not mad at it.
My haiku. For the scenesters, yes. But there's fun to be had and good energy. And last but not least, Drew, what is your haiku?
Gave them no chances. Gerard writing comic books. Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are our thoughts on My Chemical Romance's Danger Days, Danger Days, The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys. You can, of course, find this album on our Spotify playlist. Play Record Breakers, the home game. Do your due diligence and your due diligence. You might also find that the last few episodes of the podcast are also on the playlist right underneath their albums. Because apparently now Spotify lets you add episodes, podcast episodes to playlists. So
wait, are you adding the album then the podcast?
Yeah, that's so far, at least for the Fast Pass. I've got a lot of work to do to get the whole playlist like that. So I'm doing that. I'll like a burner playlist on the side, and just because it's easier to add, because you have to do it on mobile. I can't do it on the desktop version, so I can't drag and drop on the desktop version. It is
Spotify is drunk.
Yeah, it's an issue. I will be working on that, and then it will be updated at least for the last like 300 episodes, because that's a Squarespace thing. So check out.
You just said 300 episodes, and the fact that we have more than 300 episodes.
Yes, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And you mentioned the first track of each album every time. Yes. I respect the consistency.
Yes, exactly. You gotta live the game.
The first track of the album should give you like a good middle cut of what the album should be about. You should be forewarned about what you're getting into.
Exactly. But yeah, on that Spotify playlist will be next week's record.
I respect.
I know that we've been talking about the Korean music. We've been doing Korean artists. I know that there's been a request for a Korean metal. How does Korean post rock with a prominent use of traditional instruments sound? Because
is this
gonna be a band by the name of Jambinai and their album Onda. And I'm look forward to that. It's gonna be an interesting album. You might have seen them. They played the closing ceremony of the Winter Olympics.
That's wild. Right. Yes.
Yes. So it's gonna be a cool experience. Like this is a cool album and a cool band. So look forward to that.
I like them.
Look forward to that next week. But that'll be next week, and this is this week. And you can, of course, find us all over the internet. David is at Call Me DJM. Drew is at XJuiceForX. Brett is at HBDBRBRHIBBITYBBIBBARD. I'm at PDRave. The show's at 4 Record Breakers. That's the number 4 Record Breakers. RecordBreakersPodcast.com. RecordBreakersPodcast@gmail.com. Rebelly.net for this and other shows. Rebelly TV on YouTube and on Twitch. We're on Twitch live 3 days a week. Tuesdays we do D&D. Wednesdays we do this thing, the Record Breakers thing. Thursdays we do Space Truckin'. We do No Man's Sky. It's fun times. We might do other streams, but that's our nice little schedule there. Follow us and subscribe to us there. If you want to throw us your Bezos bucks and your free Twitch Prime subscription, that would be fantastic. But yeah, go check us out there. Come hang out with us. Like, share, subscribe, do all the things. Until next time, hasta los huevos.
Toodaloo. Thank you.
You know that we were distraught when we heard about your dry rot infesting your expansion slot. Omega, you're more than just a ship. You've got the universe in your grip. When you bite that pouty lip, Omega.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.